Sometimes I think, should I maybe listen to the things you say directly in my face when we're at our most intimate?
It's a good question. Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sweet Smell of Succession, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen. I host podcasts such as Culturally Relevant and The Filmcast. Joining me, as always, she is the co-host of podcasts such as Extra Hot, Great, Listen to Sassy, and Again With This, Tara Ariano. Tara, how is the Roy family doing this week?
Well, I mean, they had one party last week, and now it's time for another one. They're doing great. They're celebrating.
Yeah, I mean, they're just going from strength to strength here. There's nothing wrong with the Roy family in this episode.
Certainly not.
Well, if you're just tuning in for the first time, I don't know why you would be, but you might. What we do this week on the podcast, what we do every week on the podcast, is we recap and spoil every week's episode of Succession. This week, we'll be talking about Season 3, Episode 8. Tara, how do you pronounce this?
Chianti Shire.
Chianti Shire is the name of the episode. And I assume that's the place where they are, right? Basically?
No, I think it's a joke. Chianti is a wine and Shire is like the name of a lot of English places. I think the idea is there's a lot of English people descending on this location in Tuscany.
I think your sense of English humor, as will be evident throughout this recap, is much more finely attuned than mine. So thank you for that. But yes, we'll be talking about Season 3, Episode 8. You can always email us, let us know what you think of the show and of the podcast at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. We actually got an email this week. This is a question from Lawrence from Brooklyn. Okay. Now, I want to point out that this email came in before Lawrence has seen this week's episode. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't know that we'll directly answer it right now. Maybe we'll get to it later on, but Lawrence writes into successionpodcast@gmail.com. Hi, Dave and Tara. Since the show started, I've described it to my friends as our time's great Shakespearean drama. In another era, the Roys would be a royal family. Now they're uber-rich media moguls, our era's royalty. So in episode 7, when Lucas Mattson talks about offing Logan, I can't help but hear the early tracks being laid for a murder later on. Oh. Like in many Shakespeare plays, like Othello and Macbeth, characters often hint at murder long before it happens, setting the groundwork for what's to come. You'll have commented that the show seems a bit stuck in place. I wonder if season 4 will end with Logan's murder, maybe by Kendall. Eventually, Logan needs to die for the show to live up to its title, and a plotline of Logan simply having a heart attack and dying out of the blue would be a fairly anticlimactic way for the show to ultimately force the succession of the company. No, it must come from the machinations of the children, as everything does, and this felt like the first domino in that direction. Thoughts?
Wow.
Will Logan be murdered?
Yeah, I don't see that. But I mean, I think he's right that Kendall has been trying to metaphorically kill his father since the end of last season.
Yes.
You know,
I would agree with you that a murder feel, and, you know, certainly this episode has a lot of intimations of murder.
Yeah.
As well as a possible death of a major character, question mark.
Yeah.
But I think a straight-up murder feels a little bit out of character with the show. I could see a scenario kind of Breaking Bad style where somebody's dying and maybe, like, the person doesn't help them survive, you know? Maybe?
Yes.
I could see it getting to that point, you know?
Yes.
With Walter White and Jesse Pinkman's girlfriend, for instance, right?
Right, right. But I still think if it was any of the kids, like any of the kids is too fucked up to not try to extend Logan's life, in
right.
my opinion.
I agree with you. I can't imagine a scenario where like Logan is...
By the way, it tells you how dark the show is when you're like, they're too fucked up to kill their dad. they're so fucked up they would not kill him. You know
so
what I mean.
They're so fucked up it's gone back all the way around to the other direction.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's now not fucked up anymore.
Exactly. I just mean their feelings for Logan are complicated, but I think all of them would say, he's my dad, I love him. I mean, Roman more than any of them for sure.
Right, and we saw that a couple episodes ago too, when Logan had his like heat stroke episode or whatever, and Kendall still tried to help him, you know?
Yes.
So murder feels uncharacteristic for the show. I don't think it's impossible, but it feels uncharacteristic for the show.
So, yeah. That's not something I would predict personally, but I've been wrong before.
Okay, another bit of news that broke this last week that I wanted to mention is just we talked a lot about Adrian Brody's house a couple episodes ago. He was a billionaire shareholder, and we're like, oh, what a nice looking house.
Yeah.
Well, that house, which appeared in the show, the real life house, recently sold. It was listed. So this house is in the located in the hamlet of Wainscott.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever visited Wainscott before.
Have not. No.
Well, it's apparently a very delightful hamlet, and the house was listed for $52 million.
Mm-hmm.
The seller was David Susser, an aerospace and defense entrepreneur, and his wife Marla Susser.
Sure.
It was listed for $52 million. It sold for $45 million, Tara. That's a
wow.
That is a pretty harsh haircut off of a 52. Don't you hate it when you list a $52 million house and it only sells for $45 million? I mean,
yeah, that's a real bargain someone got.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Like, at that price, Tara, you're saving money. I'm sorry, you're losing money if you don't buy it. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So anyway, just wanted to mention that follow-up. I thought that was kind of a fun little tidbit about following up on the real-life goings-on of Succession. Anyway, we are at Season 3, Episode 8, Tara. There is only one episode that remains.
That's right. Previous seasons have been 10 episodes. This one is but 9.
Yeah, and this episode, and I think the next episode, I'm going to guess, it follow probably a similar structure to Season 1's episode 9 and 10, right?
Yeah.
Which was basically Season 1, Episode 9 was like before the wedding, and then Season mm-hmm. 1, Episode 10 was like the reception. And my
yeah.
guess is this is going to be a similar thing where we're going to see like how the wedding plays out and the reception and all that stuff.
Right.
So,
this feels very much like part 1 of 2.
Yes, yes. So all that said, Tara, overall thoughts on this episode? Did you like this episode?
Well, I mean, to build on what I just said, I mean, it feels like a lot of table setting
mm-hmm.
that's going to play off in the next episode.
So you felt kind of a little bit incomplete. You felt like you can't really judge the episode until you get to the next episode.
Yes. What about you?
I love this episode. I thought this was an awesome episode. I thought tons of stuff happened this episode. I thought it gave us a lot of the dynamics that we appreciate from the show, and it paid off a couple of plot lines that have been like long running this season. So
yes,
even though there is going to be a part 2, I really, really enjoyed this one. I thought this is like a really strong episode of the show.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to talking about it with you. So let's dive into it. A lot of different plot lines happen. Tara, how should we break this up?
Well, so there are so many moving parts, which, as we said, it's set at and around Caroline's wedding in Tuscany, that I thought, let's go through each of the Roy kids' arcs. Because it follows a... If we go from oldest to youngest, feels like the logical way to go through mm-hmm. them, given what happens.
In descending order of age, let's do it.
Yes, yes. So that means we're starting with Connor. And we already got a hint in What It Takes, episode 6, that the true story of Willa and Connor's relationship might be a problem for his candidacy. And that seems to be true. Someone from Politico has reached out to Connor to get more information on Willa, including her full employment history. She doesn't seem that worried about it, probably because she doesn't really care about Connor. Definitely doesn't care about his presidential ambitions. But Connor and Maxim have been talking about it. And it seems like he's ramping up to breaking up with her. But he proposes instead, specifically asking her to make him, quote, the most happiest man / most bulletproof candidate alive. And she sort of fakes like she accepts because he does it in public. But ultimately says, I have to think about it, and is still thinking about it as we leave them in this episode.
It is an incredible scene when he's kind of talking through his gritted teeth to her,
mm-hmm.
because I think at that moment he realizes what's happening.
For sure.
And he's like, look, let's like save a little face here. And that, but you know, I'm still going to give you the time and grace to think about the situation. You know, like
mm-hmm.
It's just an amazing moment, you know, in the show and for Connor. And I really appreciate how that played out.
Yeah, there are so many layers to Connor's understanding of where things stand with him and Willa, where like he is besotted enough to be like, what if we got married, knowing that she's, you know, only started to be with him because she's a sex worker and is continuing essentially to do sex work as his girlfriend, like full time.
Really? But, is that that's not been my sense. My sense is like, she's basically exclusive at this point.
Sure. But
given,
I think
given
she's,
that,
yes.
he's a heavy investor in Sands. Right.
Right. But I think she's still getting paid.
No, I think I get that sense as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And like deep down, he knows that's what's happening, of course. Yeah. I mean, he's signing the checks or having someone sign them. But like he is so good at deluding himself about what they're actually doing that, you know, I think sometimes they play the part so well for the public that I think sometimes he fools himself.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think of what the show's done with Connor this season? I think, you know, it could do more, but like we're wrapping up, you know, so we kind of have a pretty good sense at this point of like, you know, what the show's going to do with this character storyline. What do you think of Connor?
Yeah, I mean, I was very clear last season that I hated the idea of him running for president. I still kind of do. But at the same time, if you're going to do that, you got to do it. And I know that this is a gigantic cast and there's so many characters that you have to come up with story for. But Connor, to me, is the one that gets serviced the least. And, you know, just fine. He's mostly a comic relief character. But if there were more room for this plot line to actually unfold, I feel like we would be seeing more of like Connor's Comfrey and the other poor idiots who are working on his campaign. Like, maybe it's just Maxim, but even if that's true, they would be together all the time. Like, I don't know how seriously we're supposed to think Connor is taking the campaign and, you know, how big a deal this story is that the reporter is working on, other than that it would be embarrassing.
I agree with you that the show has really struggled to make Connor anything other than comic relief this season. Mm-hmm. I do think there is a really interesting germ of an idea about him being a spoiler candidate. That was mentioned, I think, last episode.
Yeah.
That he has almost 1%, and that's enough to decide the election. In the 2016 election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, third-party candidates, if their votes had gone different ways, could have theoretically been decisive in that election. And so that's like a very interesting idea that could be explored more next season. But we see extremely little of his campaign this season, and it feels like it's not where the show wants to focus right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also kind of feels like the show is searching for ways to involve him in things, you know, like in episode 5, the shareholder meeting, he kind of comes in and he's like, hey, I'm going to start making some harsh demands on this really important day. And it's like,
yeah,
really? Is that how that, I guess, you know, he's such an asshole that like, that could be how it plays out. But
yeah,
even Connor, I feel like, has to know when to play his cards. And, you know, I don't know, maybe it could have played out that way, but I feel like the show's really struggled to find anything interesting to do with Connor this season. But you know, maybe next season will be Connor's year. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, again, he's supposed to be running European cable. We haven't seen.
Oh, yeah. How did that play out? We'll see.
Yeah. So next up is Kendall. He has buzzed his hair very short, telling his mother when she asks that he's stripping down. And if he was planning on having a lovely Tuscan getaway, it's spoiled for him immediately when Caroline lets him know that Logan already talked to her and said he doesn't want to, quote, be together with Kendall. And Kendall is reasonably upset by this, since, as he reminds Caroline, Logan is the ex-husband she hates and Kendall is her child. But she's basically like, I don't care about any of this shit. I'm only doing it for the sake of my bridezilla of a fiance. So get over it. Kendall, of course, has never gotten over anything in his life. He's not going to start now. He makes a small scene at a cocktail party by ordering Logan to come and have dinner at his villa. And Logan maintains the upper hand of the party by just saying he'll think about it. In fact, just saying it to Roman to tell Kendall, who is like 6 feet away, like a child.
It's, it's hilarious. But yeah, they do have to continue posturing even in this situation, right? Yeah.
Yes. But anyway, Logan does go and he sets a tone by implying straight off the bat that Kendall may have had his chef poison Logan's dish, making Kendall's son Iverson taste it first. But then they get into it. Kendall,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but my favorite part of that scene is the fact that Logan does not even have any pretense for Iverson coming over there.
Yeah.
He's not like, hey, Iverson, how's it going? You know, like, how's life? You know, how's school? How are classes? By the way, can you check out this? You know, like, there's no attempt to even disguise what is happening.
Right.
Which is probably going to result in some Iverson therapy bills later on, I think.
Well, Iverson doesn't know what's happening.
One day, I think he's going to put it together.
He's going to be
like, that was kind of weird when, my grandpa was like, just eat this and go away, you know, like, and by the way, it happened at that time when things were very bad between them, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how much the kids have a sense of that, really. And this is the first time I think we've even seen Iverson and Logan interact since Logan hit him at Thanksgiving in season one. I may be wrong about that. Look, Iverson, by the way, is so tall. Both of the kids, it's been so long since we've seen them. They're so big now.
Yeah, they grow up so fast. They grow up so fast. Anyway.
After Logan has satisfied himself that Kendall didn't try to poison him, they get into it. Kendall wants the $2 billion he quoted to Naomi in last week's episode, plus what he calls a chunky asset he can run. And even though the birthday card had a share purchase proposal folded up in it, Logan claims that this very hurtful gesture was for fun and that he may actually want to keep Kendall in the company to humiliate him, basically. And Kendall denigrates Logan for exploiting American resentment to make money. And Logan, bitterly amused, asks if Kendall only just noticed that, which, by the way, fair point. But we'll get into that after the clip because it gets pretty dark from there. Clip two.
I'm a great revolutionary. A bit of fucking spice. A bit of fun.
Fun.
A bit of truth.
Okay, truth, okay.
I fucking know things about the world or I wouldn't turn a buck.
Maybe.
Not necessarily nice things.
Look, whatever. Let me out. Okay? Pay up and let me out. I don't want to be you. I'm a good guy.
How long was that kid alive before he started sucking in water? A couple of minutes? 3, 4, 5? Long time. 2 minutes. What were you even doing? Chasing a bit of tail? Hey, are you queer? Did you try to fuck him? Or was it just the drugs?
I'm better than you.
Sure. You're my son. I did my best. And whenever you fucked up, I cleaned up your shit. And I'm a bad person? Fuck off, kiddo.
Ooh. I mean,
gotta take a shower after that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about it at the top of the season, but it's like, this thing sure keeps coming up. And, you know, now we know why, because it was going to come up again. But it's only because Kendall, you know, put himself in this position, and he really has some balls pulling this shit when Logan holds the ultimate trump card to shut him up. Like, you know, I'm better than you. Maybe Logan is also directly responsible for someone's death, but he knows enough to make sure Kendall doesn't know about it to use against him, at least. But also, the hypocrisy about ATN. Like, he was in the company for his entire career. So, you know, to be doing his whole woke routine now that he's out and trying whatever he's been trying this season is rich as well, as we keep saying. But, you know, the other thing that Logan can always use against Kendall is his money. And he's doing that now, floating a stock purchase offer, teasing Kendall with the thought that Kendall could be free somehow, and then taking it back, which is, this seems like a thing the Roy brothers like to do with their kids, or grandchildren in Greg's case. Since I mentioned Naomi in the run-up to that clip, she's been on Kendall's arm at social events all season, but she didn't come to the wedding after their, you know, big moment at the end of the birthday one.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, remember Kendall brought her to that boat trip in end of season two, you know?
Right.
So maybe things not going so hot between them after the birthday party, you know? Very possible.
Right.
So, yeah.
Or maybe she was like, no, thank you. I don't want to hang out with your entire family.
Yeah. Reasonable. Reasonable.
Fair enough. But you know who did come to the wedding?
Who is
Marsha?
That?
Marsha gets zero line. She's in one scene in this episode. It's wild.
I was stunned to see Marsha again and that plotline not even addressed at all. It just feels like a big thing to drop into the episode with no explanation. I mean, we have no knowledge of the logistics of the show.
No.
But it really feels like cast scheduling and COVID probably interfered with some of these plotlines.
I'm sure that's true.
it kind of feels like we're getting a kind of abridged version of not all of them. You know, some of the, like the shareholder thing, I thought felt like fully realized, you know, but this whole Marcia stuff just felt like we saw the beginning of an interesting storyline that has just basically not paid off at this point.
Yeah. So. And if you have her, like, why would you just have her stand there silently? That's the craziest part to me. Like, not even to say, hello, nice to meet, like, not even a nice to meet you, does she say?
Yeah. So to me, there are many interesting components to this whole scene. I think, yeah, as you point out, the idea of like Kendall trying to posture and position himself as better than Logan. It's the story that Kendall needs to tell himself to go to sleep every night.
Of course.
And Logan's not going to let him get away with it.
Yeah.
But the other part is just Logan basically declining Kendall's offer. Like, I thought that Logan actually made that offer in good faith at the end of last episode.
Right. I did too.
Logan is basically declining Kendall's acceptance of his original offer. And I think it points to the fact that these two have this kind of sick, symbiotic, parasitic relationship going. And from Logan's perspective, maybe it doesn't make sense to release Kendall. You know, it doesn't make sense to release a guy who like has all this information about the company and have him out in the world. Kind of a keep your friends close, your enemies closer kind of deal. Maybe.
Right.
You know, like I can see the play in that, but it just feels a little bit too much like Logan fucking around with Kendall in a way that, I don't know, feels a little bit out of character. You know, like, I don't feel like Logan's the kind of like, let's fuck around a little bit, unless there's like a strategic benefit to it, which it doesn't feel like there is right now.
Right. Well, we get a little bit of insight into Logan's psyche with regard to his children or things he loves from Caroline. But that's another clip that we will get to.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's not, so it goes badly. Kendall doesn't get what he wants, and he gets kind of owned in this scene.
He does. But
that's not the end of the troubles for Kendall, is it, Tara?
No, he gets the last scene of the episode despondently floating in the pool at his villa and ignoring his children. And then once they've gone inside, dropping his beer bottle and letting his face fall into the water. And we watch the bubbles coming out of his nose for a while, and we black out on that. And I'm not sure that he was, from what we see, his face is in the water long enough to say he's definitely going to drown. Like, if he comes in the next episode, he's totally, I mean, physically fine, obviously mentally not so much, but it wouldn't surprise me. But but I also wouldn't rule out that the show might kill Kendall either. And so what do you think? Would the show kill Kendall? Should the show kill Kendall?
We should point out that we do not watch the Next Time On previews before we record this. So, like,
that's
true. Possible as you're listening to this, you've seen the Next Time On. Kendall's right. Alive and well. You know, it's possible that you've already seen that.
Right.
But we do not. We have not seen that as we're recording this.
Right.
I think it would be a extremely bold move to kill Kendall. And I would admire the show so much for it. You know what I mean? Like, wow, that is such, because last episode I complained quite a bit about how the show continues to maintain the status quo.
Yeah.
And this would be the ultimate no longer maintaining the status quo, right? This would be the ultimate, you're killing off basically the main character of the show.
Debatable, but yes.
One of the main characters.
Absolutely.
Certainly like the guy who like, in my opinion, for season one and significant part of season two was like the main character.
For sure, yes.
And so I think it would be extremely bold move that would like kind of reset the entire situation. But I also think it's probably, you know, my gut tells me it's probably an annoying head fake, you know?
Yeah.
There have been many examples of TV shows head faking that they're going to kill someone, and then the next episode the person's fine, or they go to the hospital and then they're fine, right? I'm just gonna throw out a couple. Let's go back to the Wayback Machine. NYPD Blue episode one. with I think Sipowicz, right, gets like shot like 50 times and then
Sure.
Game of Thrones.
There's
a couple great examples of that. There's an episode where famously, so spoilers for Game of Thrones, Jon Snow is killed, and then next season he comes back. But there's another episode in, I think, season five or six, where Jaime Lannister is thrown off his horse into a huge pool of water, and he's like sinking at the end of the episode. And you're like, oh my gosh, is Jaime dead? He's not dead. He's just completely fine the next episode. But like, you know, I find it to be mildly irritating when when something like this happens, because it's like, okay, like, if they actually kill him off, I'd be like, okay, good. You know, fair enough. You earned it, show. But most of the time, yes, it's a head fake. And I find it to be mildly irritating. What do you think of this convention in TV when they kind of pretend they're going to kill someone?
Oh, I mean, I watch soaps. I watch nighttime soaps. So this happens all the time. Like, if somebody ever dies off screen, you just have to assume they're not really actually dead. Or they're going to come back and be like, I got reconstructive surgery and I look completely different now, because they're played by a different actor. I mean,
so I think you're saying like you accept this as part of the TV diet that you watch and it's not a big problem for you.
Well, I mean, it depends on the quality of the show, right? Like, I certainly have better higher expectations of some genres than others. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a head fake, like one of the most notorious examples is that, like, at the end of, I think, the second last season of Magnum PI, they killed Magnum and then they renewed the show for another season and were like, oops, it was all a dream or something.
Yeah, or another example I can think of right off the top of my head is also like Sherlock, the BBC mm-hmm. series, which I actually think is terrible. Like when you look at the whole body of work, I think it's quite bad. But and there is a season when they presumably kill Sherlock, but then he comes back, and actually they never explain how he comes back. And it's actually, I actually thought that was kind of funny the way they did that. Like, mm-hmm. it was kind of the point that the show was making, which I actually appreciated, was that, like, it doesn't really matter how he came back. You know,
right.
They're going to figure, like, we could use any number of explanations for how he survived this kind of situation. You know, and I kind of liked, it was kind of a deconstruction of that idea. So I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, I don't like it. I don't like it, Tara. Don't like it one bit. But, you know, whatever. It would be different, I think, if it would be more annoying if the show showed him, like, falling into the pool and, like, there for, like, a minute. You know, then I'd be like, okay. But it's just like, you know, maybe he's going to wake up choking water at the end of the next episode or at the beginning of the next episode, and it's going to be fine. So,
I mean, I don't even necessarily think we're going to get that. I just think it'll be like he was just being sad in the pool, and
next time we see him, he's completely fine, basically.
Exactly.
It's possible.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Kendall's character is that they definitely have laid enough track to where if the story does go to, you know, suicide, you'd be like, as you said, you earned it. Like, it wouldn't be, it wouldn't feel out of character.
Agreed.
But I also think the nature of this show is that it will not let Kendall escape his problems.
Right.
It's going to continue to punish him and make him live with his choices.
I don't know. I feel like I always admire when a show kills off a beloved character after that character has kind of served their purpose in the story.
Right.
I'm going to throw out a few shows, and then I'm going to spoil those shows. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to spoil The Wire. So if you haven't seen The Wire, I'm going to spoil, but basically probably one of the best deaths in all of TV history, in my opinion, is Stringer Bell.
For sure.
Who gets killed in season, I think, four of The Wire?
Three.
Is it three? Anyway, yes. He gets killed by Brother Muzan and Omar, I believe, right? And that is an extremely beloved character. Right. Like, it's an amazing performance, star making performance for Idris Elba.
Yep.
Super charismatic guy, super handsome guy, really smart, kind of a character you want to root for. That character served his purpose in that show. Like, he had a plot function. The character's arc played itself out as, like, he's kind of an agent of change, of trying to get these people on the streets into a better position. Financially and business wise.
Yeah.
And he failed. And, like, that's kind of that character's arc. And the show is just like, okay, it's done. And now he's dead. Like, we're going to kill him off because it doesn't make sense to keep him in the show anymore. And honestly, to me, it feels like this would be a good place to end Kendall's arc.
You know,
like, I would not, like, I don't know how many more places they can go with Kendall's arc other than some kind of redemption, other than like he actually becomes a good person. But that just feels so wildly out of character at this point that I don't.
For him and for the show, like,
yeah.
Do we see any of these people getting redeemed? I don't.
Maybe Tom, I could see.
Yeah. You
know? Maybe I could see that happening, right?
Yes.
But
I mean, that's the case for Tom and Greg. Like, their only hope.
The kind of outsiders, as it were, right?
Right.
Nominally outsiders, right?
Yeah. Their only hope is to leave the family. And that's true of the people in the family as well, by the way. Like, that's the only hope for them.
They need to pull a Meghan Markle, Prince Harry situation, basically.
Yes.
Get out, right? That's how they're going to redeem themselves.
Right.
So, So I think that it would be like a good storytelling decision to kill Kendall off, you know? Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
I don't think it's going to happen. And no. it does make me a little sad, but you know, whatever. I'll get over it.
Well, there's still another whole season to come. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows who may get killed off?
Tara, like in this liminal space we have right now before we actually know what happens, you know,
yeah.
Like by next week or, you know, even if you watch the preview for next week, like we'll know definitively how the show's going to handle it. But like,
right.
I think my first reaction was, how is Kendall potentially going to the hospital going to complicate the wedding and the reception? Like, how is it going to mess with that situation?
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Maybe it's not even going to be a plot point next episode.
Yeah, I don't see a hospital for him.
All right. We will find out.
We
it's
will.
It's fun to predict. Fun to predict. Okay. So speaking of Tom and Shiv, what's going on with Shiv this episode?
So after the birthday party, Shiv is feeling pretty down about her prospects and her status at the company, but she has to put on a happy face, sort of, for the wedding because her mother would not let her live it down if she skipped it. And she vaguely shares Roman's concerns that Caroline is marrying a gold digger, but she lets Roman take the lead in confronting Caroline about it. However, at the Bachelorette get-together, Shiv does find Caroline outside having a cigarette and checks that she does actually have lawyers putting something together prenup-wise. And so Caroline tells Roman earlier she doesn't need a prenup, but she tells Shiv in this scene she does have lawyers, so it's unclear what is actually the case. But what is clear is that Peter, who's played by Pip Torrens from The Crown, the first couple of seasons of The Crown, he was Tommy Lassels with big mustache. He is a social climbing scumbag who wants to leverage Logan's connections to get himself appointed to the House of Lords. And why not, since someone like him, with multiple bankruptcies, currently laying off nurses at the nursing homes he runs, would probably not do well in an election. And I feel like Jesse Armstrong, who wrote this episode and created the show, of course, really relished getting into the class weeds with this plot line. I feel like he loves it when they go to Brandon so he can do stuff like this. And specifically having Caroline tell Roman that Peter is not posh, as Roman accuses. Peter's father is a doctor, which is a diss. It means they're only middle class or upper middle class. Peter bought all his own furniture. And when I watched the episode, I was like, the hell does that mean? But then I realized that she means it wasn't passed down to him from, you know, some grand estate. And finally calls him a grasping little scholarship boy. All of that to like explain what his status is extremely British.
This is why I love listening to Tara's recaps, because I basically didn't pick up on any of those things the first time I watched the episode. So thank you, Tara.
I mean, for an American, it's like he's a scholarship boy and look where he is now, marrying a duchess or whatever the hell she is. And it's like, no, but for a British person of a certain class, it would be like, ew, Peter.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this conversation between Shiv and Caroline. It also gets dark, and this clip is long, but I think it's worth it. Clip 3.
Yeah, I might have been a bit of a spotty mother, but you've been a shitty daughter, so.
You weren't a spotty mother. You were just an absence. But I'm fine.
I moved back to bloody New York so I could be near you, and I never fucking saw you.
Mom, it's okay. It's fine. You let Dad take us, and it was probably best.
Gave him custody so you could keep your shares and I could protect your interests. You chose. I'll have the carbonara and daddy, please.
I didn't choose anything.
You tend to get what you want anyway.
And you don't?
I don't think I've ever won a single battle in my whole life.
I was 10, Mom. I was a fucking kid.
You were 13. And you knew how to twist the knife. You knew then, and you know now. And I might cry.
Oh, yeah? Where's the onion?
You were quite a piece of work. You were my onion. You are my onion.
Yeah, well, you're my fucking onion.
The truth is, I probably should never have had children. You've made the right decision. Some people just aren't made to be mothers. I should have had dogs.
Well, you could have had dogs.
No, not with your father. He never saw anything he loved that he didn't want to kick it just to see if it would still come back.
Eep. So leaving aside the issue of Caroline thinking that Logan was definitely an unfit hypothetical dog owner, but would be fine as a dad to her human children. We're doing these plot lines out of order, but this scene comes before Logan's dinner with Kendall. And it's not like we haven't already seen plenty of instances of Logan kicking his children to see if they would come back. But the Kendall scene is one of the most brutal examples of that.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention about this scene, I really, you know, appreciate these scenes between Shiv and her mom, I think, because they speak to kind of the shifting nature of memory, you know?
Yeah.
And I literally don't know who to believe. Like,
right.
Probably the mom is right. But, you know, when she's like, I was 10, you were 13.
You were 13.
Who's right? Yeah. Probably the mom, but like, maybe not. You know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when there have been so many resentments building up over the years and pain, memory gets twisted and shaped to kind of your own narrative of things. And
yeah.
I feel like this interchange between them really brings that out. So, yeah.
Yeah. But it's also, I mean, you know, it's certainly fine if you have children and then later in life think that was not the right choice for you. And it's even fine to tell someone that, but the one person you can't say that to is the child that you had.
Yes. That would be the most considerate thing to do. Yes.
You know, and then, you know, if this is how you interact with them, you can't then be like, let's not be out here being shitty to each other. Like, no, this relationship is just never going to be good. So be glad that she came, I guess. But anyway, talking to Caroline apparently convinces Shiv to prove Caroline wrong and have children after all. And Tom's joy is quickly replaced by discomfort. And actually, even his joy is a little bit suspicious. But clip four.
Just tell me anything. Do anything to me.
You say anything to me. Go on. Mistress Siobhan Roy. Go on.
You're not good enough for me.
Oh, right. Oh, I see. Well, let's see about that.
Yeah, no, I'm way out of your fucking league.
Oh, you think so? Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But that's why you want me. That's why...
Maybe...
You love me.
Fuck you.
Even though I don't love you.
Uh-huh.
But you want me anyway.
You know, I wouldn't call myself an expert at role-playing, Tara. but I'm going to say, if you do role-play, my suggestion would be don't say incredibly troubling truths that you actually believe.
Yeah.
That's kind of my sort of guidance. You know,
yeah,
maybe that's why I'm not in the role play guide writing game.
But that's, you know, that's not really playing a role if you're just saying things that you both know are true, but try not to talk about.
Yeah. Siobhan sucks at role playing is kind of what we're trying to say, you know?
Yeah.
This is one of the most brutal sex scenes, or I guess pre-sex scenes I've ever witnessed. And no sex is actually shown. I mean, it's painful. It's painful to watch.
It's rough.
I don't know what is going through Shiv's head, you know, when she's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just like, hey, I'm going to say what I actually feel, and that's going to be hot somehow.
Well, it works.
I guess. I mean, we don't know what happens in the sex afterwards. I guess it's implied that they enjoyed it, but certainly not something I enjoyed as a viewer. Anyway.
Yes. I don't know how much anyone enjoyed it, but I mean, everything Shiv says is apparently true. Like, I don't love you, and that's what you want me anyway. And then they have sex, so I guess she's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, alcohol lowers inhibition, so Tom should believe what Shiv tells him when she's had a few, but he decides to check in with her the next day anyway and see if she meant it when she said she didn't love him, and she waves that off at first, and when she said she wanted to have a baby. And this clip's also long, but it's our last one.
Yeah, we should freeze at least.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know, embryos survive way better than eggs, so we should put it together and then see where we are.
Okay. And when do you think that might be?
Well, I don't know, Tom. But it's important that the host chamber is willing. Well, they keep them for 10 years, and then, you know, you can do what you want. But it's different if one of us dies or is in a long-term coma. And, no, it's true. You decide beforehand what you would want to happen. And, you know, I don't just automatically get them if we divorce or something like that, if that's the thing that concerns you.
No, I just, I wouldn't have necessarily thought about all of that.
Well, I just think it's smart to bank some embryos. Huh. And then, you know, we can see where we are.
So we could be looking at, like, 10 years? That's like 10 years is like 2.5 Olympics.
When you put it like that, it's... No, it'll get clearer. I just think it's a good option. And then if something happens or, you know, you change your mind, they destroy them. It doesn't bind you.
I would want you to have my babies if I died.
Oh. Oh. Ah, thank you.
And if you died?
Would I want, yeah, I think so. Can I think about it?
Sure.
You know, Tom, I do. I may not love you, but I do love you. You know.
I know. I do know. I do know.
So, this is the most direct proof we've had that they never really resolved anything after his heartbroken declaration in the season 2 finale, or maybe even ever talked about it, and have just been going through, you know, crisis from crisis to crisis since then. So my question to you, which seems less likely, that Kendall will leave the company alive or that Tom will ever leave Shiv and try for happiness with someone who just loves him without any qualifiers?
I think it's less likely that Kendall will leave the company alive. I actually think it's possible that Tom is going to get out of this.
Yeah.
It's not likely, but
no.
I think it's possible.
He sure looks miserable, though.
Yeah, I don't think Kendall will ever escape. But this is an interesting conversation, both because, number one, it reveals that there is all these social questions that we don't have answers to right now about embryos, yeah. Right? Like, and there's no real clear way to figure out what to do with them. And kind of a weird thing that I didn't think Succession would ever touch upon, but it is a real sort of, these are actual questions that couples have to ask.
Yes.
But the fact that this couple is going through it kind of indicates the rather mechanical nature of their relationship right now. And I appreciated that. So, also the line, like, I may not love you, but I love you, says everything. You know, it's that Shiv does have some affection for him, right?
Yeah.
But it's not in the same way that he has for her. And I think that that line sums everything up. So
no, she loves him like she loves her dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Indeed.
So we'll come back to Shiv because at the end of the episode, her plot line intersects with Roman. So let's get into him.
Yes.
He gets the triumph of telling Sandy and Stewie about the Gojo deal. But then when everyone's in Tuscany, Carolina sends a Mattson tweet to the group text, which, sidebar, I love that there's a group text that the top team is all on. Anyway, the tweet is going to Macau feeling lucky, and he's got a little filter on where he's got coins flying out of his mouth and he's surrounded by horseshoes and four-leaf clovers and stuff. He's probably not going just to go to the casino. Everyone panics about what this might mean while Mattson ignores their phone calls. And it's decided that Roman will have to go see Mattson, who is conveniently just a helicopter and a boat ride away, and find out what's happening. This will require Roman to take a break from sending Jerry dick pics. She's brought this Lori guy from Justice to the wedding the guy we've been hearing about through the season. And that seems to have made Roman feel extraterritorial about Jerry. But anyway, at his house, Mattson basically admits to Roman that the tweet was just to goose his stock price, and it worked. Shiv says Gojo's market cap is almost the same as Waystar's now.
Or will be soon. Yeah, yeah. A lot of interesting things about this Mattson storyline. I think Mattson's probably like inspired by numerous other CEOs, but the one that his plotline most closely mirrors, in my opinion, is Elon Musk.
Yes, of course.
Elon Musk was famously charged with securities fraud for making misleading tweets about his company. And also has been known to be a little bit, let's just say, unstable on the social medias. And so I think the idea of like Mattson being kind of a loose cannon going on there, tweeting all this random stuff, feels very Muskian to me.
Yeah.
And inspired by real life in that way. I don't know that Madsen, his business or his personality resembles Musk in other ways. Mm-hmm. I don't really think so, but certainly from the perspective of the online tweets and not giving a fuck, it's very much reeks of Musk, as it were. Also, Roman says the following line when he's talking to Madsen. He says, "Were you trying to give your share price a pop by tweeting unverifiable information outside normal disclosure channels?" Which I thought, wow, that's actually impressive that he knows that language.
Yeah,
because it seems like a sentence that Roman from season one would not even comprehend.
Yep.
And I think that there has been this implication that Roman has been putting in work between episodes. Like, there was a throwaway line, I think, either this episode or last episode, where he was like, he had been up all night working with their guys putting together the Gojo deal, I think. Yeah. And so there, it seems clear that there's been a lot of work that Roman has been doing that we don't even see on the show.
Yes.
And I just really, probably my favorite plot line of this season is the Roman storyline. Like, it is... The way they're developing him as a character, the way they're making it plausible that he would go from being total fuck up to like actual canny deal maker, I think is just really, really solid. And this is another example of it. So,
and then what happens next?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he completely brings it home with he delivers on the follow through, as far as I can tell, right?
So Madsen doesn't want to talk about acquisition anymore. He wants a merger of equals. And Roman assumes this means the deal is fucked, but Jerry convinces him to try anyway. And at a meeting at a bank in Milan, it works, because it sounds like mostly sunk cost fallacy or sunk cost accuracy, because they're too far along to just let it go at this point at Waystar. So she texts him, "Good work, Roman," and he responds by inviting her to dinner to celebrate. But the dinner he's referring to is his dick, a pic of which he includes in the text. And unfortunately, turns out he doesn't send it to Jerry. He sends it to Logan, and the faces Kieran Culkin makes when Roman realizes what has happened are gorgeous.
I mean, I was dying during the scene. Oh. Were you dying?
It's
incredible.
Yes,
it's incredible. It is, you know, if I had to make a list of top Succession moments, this would be top five at least, maybe top three.
Mm-hmm.
It's glorious.
It's great.
The way this all plays out. So many great things about it, but I'll just highlight a couple. One of the things I want to mention is this is an extremely accurate depiction of how you can accidentally send a text to someone else, right? Mm-hmm. What happens is Roman composes a blank text in his iMessage on his iPhone, right? And so he goes into iMessage and like new text and then like puts the dick pic in and so on. His dad sends him a text that's like, "Good work, son." And it pops up as a notification, right? And he taps the notification, and then that basically applies his text to his dad. And I was just like, wow, man, they really worked this out from an iOS technology standpoint. I have to say. that is extremely plausible that it would play out that way. So props to them for like getting their iOS right on this episode. And then another one of my favorite moments, other than Roman's looks, is that Brian Cox looks at the text with his son's dick, and he says something along the lines of like, "I'm going to need to take five." And he like, no emotion, you know, doesn't betray disgust or anything. He's just like, you know what? I'm going to need some time to process this.
Yeah. And
amazing moment. I mean, just nonstop amazing. And what I love also is that it pays off a storyline that's now been running for what's in season two, one.
Yeah, season two.
So like we all knew that this Roman Jerry thing and Roman's recklessness was probably going to get him in trouble at some point.
Yep.
And the way that it pays off in this episode is just very satisfying. It's very like the creators of the show put a ticking time bomb and now it's exploded. And it's just really, just fun and amazing and satisfying when you see something like that happen in the show. So,
yeah. Well, it's great for that reason. And it's also great because it gives Shiv something to basically leapfrog her over Roman potentially. Yes.
Finally, Shiv has a strategic advantage that she has not had basically the entire season, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she had the advantage of being a woman at a time when Waystar needed more women in visible, high profile roles. But anyways,
the season has just treated Shiv so shittily. And yes. I'm just like, she really needs a win here. And boy, did she get one.
Yeah. So she follows Logan out and immediately goes after Roman. He's a pervert. His obsession with Jerry is a problem and everyone knows about it, which is especially good because Logan doesn't like people to know things that he doesn't know. But then she goes after Jerry. Roman's a pervert. If Jerry doesn't report him to HR, she'll look weak on sexual harassment or like she was participating in his sexting.
I love that interaction between Shiv and Jerry because Shiv is so cold and calculating.
Oh, yeah.
In everything she's saying. And then Jerry is like, I don't recall. Which, by the way, if you're listening to this and you ever get in trouble, you just got to memorize three words. I don't recall.
Yeah. Jerry's a lawyer. She knows this stuff.
Yeah. So she knows to say, I don't recall. That is the safest thing you can say.
Yes.
Let me correct that. Ideally, you should say nothing and call your lawyer.
Right.
But if you're going to say anything, I don't recall is a pretty safe thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what Jerry says. And, you know, she knows what's up and she knows how to handle the situation. But I hope nothing bad happens to Jerry. That's me personally.
While Shiv is talking to Jerry, Logan's talking to Roman. And Logan, like all of us, wants to know if Roman is a sicko. That's his term. We, of course, do not kink shame. But Roman tries to play off sending a dick pic as just a joke, which if it means rubbing an adversary's face in your junk to show you own them, Logan seems like he understands that. But Logan also doesn't want Jerry hanging around like frozen fucking piss. And Roman seems to realize both that his bullshit could very much end in the termination of someone who is both one of the company's most competent employees and his mentor, who's probably taught him all the terms we heard him say with Mattson, and the woman he's maybe in love with. So Roman meekly says he doesn't think that she should get fired for being the recipient of his dick pic. But he also knows he is no longer Logan's most special boy in light of this. So he just says that and tries to get out of Logan's sight as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think it's kind of amusing and also very sad that Logan can't even comprehend, you know, that like the two of them might have a healthy relationship. Like that is beyond the scope of his comprehension. Kind of a bummer there. What did you make of the line, he doesn't want Jerry hanging around like frozen fucking piss? I didn't really understand what he meant by that. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I think it was partly that, I mean, I don't know what frozen fucking piss means, but I think he doesn't want her to be in Roman's orbit.
Mm, yeah.
If this is how he's going to be acting around her.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Yeah.
But also he doesn't want her to be around if she like has something on them, probably.
Right.
You know, even if we know Jerry would never.
Yeah.
Logan doesn't know that.
That makes sense. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, only Roman could hand his biggest adversary a cudgel that she could use to take out both Roman himself and his favorite person. And yet I still see him weaseling out of this somehow.
I think he's going to be fine, but it's just a shame that he was at his moment of greatest triumph.
He was.
And now he's got a lot more ground to make up.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I love about the show is like even Roman, even though that character has done a lot of work to like improve his business acumen this season, still cannot escape himself, right? Is the ultimate thematic result of this storyline. So,
well, no one can can do that. And also to just harken back to what you said about the way Schiff is talking to Jerry, it's exactly the way she talked to that woman in DC in the second season.
Yeah. Yeah, the woman that was going to testify about the cruises and then didn't.
Shiv goes and finds her on the playground and makes barely veiled threats.
Yeah. So a couple of other straggler storylines this episode, right, Tara?
Yeah, Comfrey comes on the trip. Even though when Kendall checks in with her, she's like, yeah, no one wants to interview you anymore. But with one exception. A couple of ex-reporters at the Globe, I assume Boston Globe, are doing a podcast about the curse of the Roys. And, you know, they're going to be talking to Connor's mother and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, and that weird thing that happened at Shiv's wedding, like a cater waiter that died. I don't know. Do you know anything about that? And Kendall's like, well, I don't think I want to go on that podcast, but please keep tabs on what they're doing.
And it totally makes sense that there would be a podcast covering the Roys.
Oh, like, God, of course.
Very plausible.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Greg and Comfrey are like maybe getting together after she like quickly pecks him on the cheek and then she gets a work call and takes off. And then Greg is talking to Shiv and Tom about whether Comfrey has enough depth for him, which, I mean, who knows what that means. But he's also attracted to a Contessa or something, a very attractive young woman that he hasn't met before this, who Roman also seems to have like put dibs on, and she doesn't seem interested in Greg.
I feel like the Greg storyline at this point has like fully jumped the shark. It just is like the idea of him landing Comfrey is like, I could totally buy that.
Yeah.
But then him kind of going rogue while he's on a trip with Comfrey, you know, and like going after another, like Roman's girlfriend, you know, or date or whatever. It just is like, what is he even? And it makes Greg out to be like an incredibly shitty person, which, you know, we knew he had some darkness in him, but I didn't think he was this shitty, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. I don't like this whole him going after the Contessa storyline. Not a fan.
Yeah.
So
I've been saying all season, I don't like what they're doing with Greg.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I thought he's consistently been great comic relief, but yeah, it just not loving the Greg storyline this episode. All right. Well, that's basically what happened at the episode.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for winners and losers. But before we get to that, Tara, let's take a couple of seconds and plug some other things we've been doing. You know, this is the penultimate episode of this season of The Sweet Smell of Succession. We've gotten a significant number of new listeners this episode.
Yeah, welcome.
And so this might be people's first exposure to the Tara David Chen podcasting universe. And you might be listening, you might be enjoying these scintillating discussions we have, and you might be like, how can I support what you're doing? Well, there's a bunch of ways to do that. But one of them is, first of all, by patronizing the sponsors we've got this season. We've had a few sponsors, and if you hear an ad for a sponsor, try to patronize what they're giving us. But also, check out our other stuff, subscribe to our other podcasts, listen to us, and spread the word. We'd really appreciate it. Tara, where can people find more of your work?
I co-host a number of other podcasts. Again with This, speaking of nighttime soap operas that I've watched, Again with This is about Beverly Hills 90210 originally. We have now since moved on to Melrose Place, and we're getting to the end of season 4 of that show. I also co-host Listen to Sassy about Sassy Magazine, the teen girls magazine from the late 80s and early 90s, and Extra Hot Great, which is a general TV podcast that David Chen has been on, and who we mention every week with the Chen Check-In, where
it's an huge honor, and I'm being 100% serious. So.
Whether our listeners should watch whatever show we're talking about. So all of those are on all your podcast platforms.
Yeah, check those out for sure. I host a couple podcasts. One of them is the Filmcast. We talk about movies every week. I also host a podcast called Culturally Relevant, where I interview actors, directors, writers, and other people from around the internet, talk about stuff that's happening in the world right now. Check out the Filmcast and Culturally Relevant. We hope that if you've enjoyed our insights on Succession, that you'll enjoy our insights on other things. All that said, Tara, let's get to winners and losers. I think for the first time this entire season, we agree on every single winner and loser this episode. So take us through, Tara, winning Roy of the week. Who is the winning Roy of the week?
Winning Roy is Shiv.
Yes, totally. Winds up on top. Starts to mend her extremely broken relationship with Tom, but also puts herself at a strategic advantage compared to Roman with the Jagojo acquisition. So definitely Shiv winning Roy for this week.
Yep.
Losing Roy?
Kendall.
Kendall, who might be dead, doesn't get what he wants from his dad. And may or may not wake up at the end, at the beginning of next episode.
And he's their stag.
So... bummer all around. Okay. Winning non-Roy.
Lucas Mattson.
Yeah. Doing pretty well. He has, through some rogue tweets, increased the market cap of his company, and it is now turning his acquisition into a merger.
Yep.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And the more they talk about what Gojo actually does, it's like, oh, damn, this does make sense. You're getting into live sports. They're going to have betting. They're going to have like games. It's like, oh, yeah, this is absolutely what Waystar should be doing.
Yeah.
Good job, Roman.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, good job, Kendall. It was his idea, as he reminded us last week.
Losing non-Roy?
Jerry.
Yeah. I don't know how she's going to get out of this one. You know, like.
Yeah.
She's in a tough situation. Even if she survives, like, this is a tough situation for her to be in.
Mm-hmm.
She has no good options. What do you think her options are, Tara? What do you think she should do? What should Jerry do?
Retire?
Really?
I mean,
because Roman sent her a dick pic, like that's the play that you think she should make? Or
do you think if you're Jerry that Logan is ever going to take you seriously after this.
It's tough.
You know? Like, yeah. She didn't, this is not due to anything that she did. Yeah. I mean, she specifically told him earlier in the episode, stop sending me dick pics. Not even please, stop it.
Yeah, stop sending me the items, I think.
The items. Yes. But he did, and now she's fucked. Like, it's not great.
Yeah. There's no way for her to disavow the pics. Mm-hmm. There's no way for her to survive without dramatically harming her relationship with Roman, basically, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that she would worry so much about that.
I think you're saying there's no way for her to even burn Roman in a way that, like,
no,
that lets her be okay, basically.
No.
You're probably right about it.
Like, I think even if she did do what Shiv says and report him, then Logan would be like, well, I don't respect that either.
Yeah.
Like, you're just being a tattletale now.
She's kind of being a no-win situation.
She really is.
Yeah. Well, then that is the definition of losing non-Roy. Each week we choose a quote of the week that's our favorite. What's your favorite quote, Tara, and why?
This is from Roman, and I feel like it's pretty obvious. I mean, speaking of what we were just saying about Jerry, she, when they're having the discussion earlier in the episode about the items he's been sending her, he advises, don't open Pandora's box. There's just more dicks in there.
Yes. Great advice.
Yeah.
My favorite quote is when Roman is talking to Lucas Madsen, who, like, seems genuinely unhinged, right? And he says, success doesn't really interest me anymore. It's too easy. Analysis plus capital plus execution. Anyone can do that.
Yeah, anyone.
Anyone. Gee, it's I don't know why no one described it that way, but it really unlocks something in me. You know?
I mean, it's true, but it's like...
but he says, but failure, that's a secret. As much failure as fast as possible, burn that shit out. That's interesting, end quote. Mm. I mean, that's just... That is just complete nonsense, in my opinion. You know, like, it just doesn't make any sense. I think it's meant to come off as, like, unhinged and ridiculous.
Well, I think he's just supposed to seem like a nihilist.
Yeah, maybe.
You know.
But it's just really kind of a very tense moment in the episode that I quite enjoyed. So, any hopes for next week's episode? Anything you want to see tied up next week, Tara? Like, the you know... Obviously, we all want to know what happens to Kendall, but, like, is there anything else that you're kind of hoping for from the next episode or, you know?
I mean, the way the end of this episode blows up, it's like, I feel like anything could happen. I don't want to make any predictions beyond what I've already said, honestly.
I am just hoping that something happens that irreversibly changes the status quo in this show, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm hoping for, is, like, Kendall dying... Roman being exiled, Jerry being fired, you know, something that, like, dramatically changes the stakes, I'm for. I think there was a funny moment. We didn't even talk about it. I think it was two episodes ago. No, it was the Kendall birthday episode, I think, where somebody was like, someone was like, hey, we're putting another bid on Pierce. And, like,
oh, yeah.
And Shiv was like, really? Pierce again? And it felt like a meta moment of the show being like, you know, really, we're going back to that storyline again? You know, like, I just feel like the show needs to do something to kind of alter the status quo. And I hope it uses next episode as an opportunity to do that. So,
yeah, well, now's the time.
Indeed. All right. That's it for today's episode of The Sweet Smell of Succession. Tara, as always, it's been a pleasure.
And for me as well. Thank you, David.
We'll see you all next week for our recap of the season 3 finale of Succession. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.